turn them in there.
Good afternoon. I call the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development to order for Wednesday, 16th of March. Taking on a very interesting topic today, and be hearing from a variety of folks. So open an informational meeting on the Road User Transportation Fund and invite Senator Starr to come forward to give us an introduction. Mr. Witt, if you'd like to get yourself situated, and I imagine you're using PowerPoint, so if you want to get that started while Senator Starr is getting started, that's fine. Thanks.
Thank you very much. For the record, I'm Bruce Starr. I happen to have the privilege of representing Western Washington County in the Senate. Really appreciate the opportunity to testify today on this, what I think is an exciting topic. And you have not opened a public hearing on the bill, is that correct?
That's correct, but we'd be happy to do that if
you'd
like to.
Would you mind?
Absolutely.
Like to make some comments directly to the bill.
No problem. So open a public hearing on House Bill 2328.
Thank you. The for me, this is an interesting process. It was only 10 short years ago, Mr. Chair, when I sat where you are sitting and had the opportunity to chair the House Committee. And it was during that 2001 legislative session when I also had the opportunity and experience, like a lot of us did just this week, and I got to drive a Ford Focus, which was a hybrid. That wasn't a hybrid. It was a fuel cell powered vehicle. 10 years ago, Ford Focus. I think most of us had the opportunity this week to drive a hydrogen fuel cell Mercedes that has traveled around the world. So 10 years ago, I had that experience, and that opened my eyes to the situation that we're now really in the middle of facing, where we have more and more vehicles on our roads. And I think it's something that, for the most part, we support, where we're getting away from petroleum as the fuel source. And we're doing that for a variety of reasons, whether it's climate change or it's creating an environment in our nation where we can be more fuel self-sufficient. Whatever your rationale or reasoning, I think it's good to move away from petroleum as a fuel source. The challenge for us as policymakers, as we care about our transportation infrastructure, is our source of funding our road system today is the gas tax. And you move away from using gasoline as a fuel source, that creates a problem for the highway fund. 10 years ago, that was the impetus that caused us to create the Road User Fee Task Force. And you will hear from Mr. Witte about the Road User Fee Task Force, the process that we've been through, really the journey we've been on in the last decade, in the last 10 years. And it brings us to House Bill 2328 today, and the opportunity, and I would suggest the necessity for us to move forward with a process and a program so that we can have a fair system in Oregon that every user of the highway system pays their fair share. And ultimately, that's the bottom line, I think, that is important. It's a road user fee. Individuals that drive on our roads ought to pay for their use of that infrastructure, the use of that system. And we as policymakers need to understand and recognize that it's our job as stewards of this system that previous policymakers and legislators and previous stewards have helped to create, a multi-billion dollar investment. And it's our job to make sure that we understand how, as we move toward alternative fuels, as we move toward these new means of transportation, that we create a system that will allow us to continue to not only invest in and potentially expand that system, but also maintain it. Maintain that that significant investment that leaders that sat in these chairs before us found a way to help to create. So I would ask that you listen to the story from Mr. Witte. I would ask that you would look at House Bill 2328 in a positive light, and that you would move the bill forward. The bill does have amendments. There's a number of amendments, in fact, and I believe Mr. Witte will testify in support of the Dash 2 amendments that are kind of a technical fixes to the bill. But I would ask that you would move the Dash 7 amendments that incorporate the amendments that Mr. Woody has in the Dash 2s with two changes. And I want to talk real briefly about the two changes to the Dash 2s that I support.
And before you do that, let me just make sure I understood you correctly. The Dash 7s would do the Dash 2 content plus what you're about to describe?
That's correct.
Okay. Please go ahead. Sorry.
So the two additions that I would bring to the table and ask that you would consider is one dealing with the rate that we would charge folks that would drive electrics or plug-in electric vehicles. From my perspective, the rate in the bill and the rate in the Dash 2s is too low. And the rate that we have in the Dash 7s is 1.43, and that is the rate that is equal to the average that the entire fleet has. So, the smart folks at ODOT have figured out what the average is, what the average driver pays, and that's the number. I believe that's the fair thing to do so that everyone pays basically the same amount. Clearly, it is an average, and so you have, extremes on both ends. But I believe that this is the appropriate number. I also, for a strictly political reason, if you move forward with the lower number, and at some point in time, the decision were to made to try to address that or adjust it up, I think it creates a more of a hill to climb for the future legislature. So I would ask that you look at that as part of the amendment in the Dash 7s. In addition to that, the Dash 7s include an opt-in opportunity, an opt-in for any driver of any vehicle, any light vehicle in the state of Oregon to opt into this process. They could opt in to the Oregon road user charge and then, would opt out of paying a fuel tax. It's important for us as we move this process forward to create enough of a critical mass of Oregonians that are taking this step together that we bring in the private sector expertise and investments that's necessary in order to move this process forward. And that's one of my thinking behind creating this opt-in opportunity. We don't know how many electric cars will be sold in Oregon in the next 2 or 3 years. We don't know how many plug-in electrics will be sold. But because of that, I think that having this opt-in opportunity will allow us to be able to attract the outside private sector investments that are necessary to move this process forward. And from my perspective, if we don't do that, I think it makes it more of a challenge for us to bring that expertise in. And that expertise from the outside is really important as we move this process forward, that it's not government that is putting, devices or black boxes or, GPS units in your vehicles, but it's private sector businesses that are working, in conjunction with government to do that. And I think Oregonians generally will have react more favorably toward that than if we were to say, well, government's mandating that you put this particular device in your vehicle and we're gonna charge you based on how much you drive. And so bringing that private sector piece in is really important, and that's the purpose for having the opt-in with the cap at 5,000. So with that, Mr. Chair, members, I appreciate the opportunity to testify. It's hard to believe that it's been a decade on this ride, but it has. We've had, I think a successful pilot in that period of time, but it's time to take this next step forward. And again, I would encourage you, I would ask you, to listen intently to the testimony that Mr. Woody will provide, but at the end of the day, that you would consider moving the Dash 7 amendments to the bill. I believe the bill has a subsequent referrals to the revenue and then probably Ways and Means. This is an important piece of policy. I'll also just say that Oregon is the leader in this, not just the leader in the nation, but in a lot of ways, we're leading internationally as states and as governments are trying to figure out how they're funding their infrastructure. And I think it's exciting for us to be at the point that we are. Mr. Woody has become really the national and international expert on the topic. So I commend him to you, and would be open to answer a question or two if necessary.
Thank you, Senator Starr, and I'm sure Mr. Witte thanks you for that introduction as well. Appreciate the way we're going at this in sort of a somewhat counterintuitive manner, in the sense that you're giving us some of the details, which is sort of a preview for the critical issues or things we might be paying attention to as we get the broader survey and background from Mr. Witte. Are there questions for Senator Starr before he needs to leave? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, thank you for all your work on this, and maybe you could share with us, it's been 10 years, there must have been a primary or at least a couple of really good reasons why it's taken so long. Do you think those reasons are addressed in the bill?
Well, again, I think Mr. Woody will talk a little bit about where we've come and what has happened in that decade of time. We have had a pilot program that a number of Oregonians participated in. We did learn a lot through that. And I think what we've learned is some things not to do as much as we've learned things to do, and I think that's why we're at the point where we're at this next step. We also have seen the significant public investment in moving toward the electric vehicles, and when, you know, couple those things together, it's time for that critical mass. So I'm not sure I'm completely answering your question, but I think it's we've got an experience with a pilot, so it's not like we didn't do anything for a decade, and the technology's changing. Smartphone technologies are we didn't have 10 years ago, we do have today, and then we combine all those things together, I think we're at getting to the point of being a critical sweet spot. Unfortunately, even when we pass this bill, you can't just flip a switch and say we turn it on. There's a period of additional development that's necessary.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Starr. One quick question. I've asked Mr. Witte this question, but I kind of like to keep things simple. And if you explored or asked anybody to explore just the idea of charging like a registration fee of $200 a year for this, rather than trying to look at mileage, because now we're looking at personnel that are going to have to check that mileage or whatever we come up with, the cell phone you're communicating, where if we just had it done by the DMV, they sail out the notice, if you want new tags, you're going to pay, well, they told me it's $171 is the average that we're looking at on a car that they pay in road taxes a year. If we just put a flat fee on this and kept it very simple and straightforward for the people that are using this. And I wonder if we've tried that model or looked at it all, or if that's something that's went through your mind, because I know you have a ton of time into this.
Yes, yeah, so Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, I appreciate the question. That is an approach that we as policymakers could take. I would suggest that it's an approach that isn't fair, because it would treat the person that drives, you know, 1,000 miles a year the same as it would treat somebody who drives, you know, 20,000 miles a year. And, you know, their use of that road system, it is not equal. And I would go back to the fairness piece of this. If you use our system, if you use our road system, and, you know, you're causing wear and tear on the highways, you're causing congestion because you're on the road, you know, there is a cost to that. And, you know, having a flat fee does not account for that cost to the system. And, you know, based on, you know, that theory, we could have, you know, do away with all the taxes, just have everybody pay a flat fee. Well, that's not a fair system in my estimation. And I think that fairness dictates that we treat drivers equally. That's kind of where the gas tax is, too. I mean, if you use a lot of gas today, you pay more. If you use less, you pay less. And that user pays kind of principle, I think, is really important.
Should I follow up?
Yeah, since I could say that the gas tax wouldn't necessarily be fair, because if you have a higher mileage car versus a lower mileage car.
No question.
So it'd be easy to say that the gas tax system wouldn't be fair, but it's your choice as an individual. So if you're wanting to buy the car, even if I only drove 1,000 miles, for me it would be, I would like it better just to pay the monthly fee or a yearly fee or whatever with the car. So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, you're absolutely correct. I mean, maybe 30 years ago, the fleet of vehicles, you know, basically got the same amount of fuel mileage, you know, within a very narrow range. Obviously, today it's a lot different than that. You know, I drive a Jeep Wrangler, and I pay a lot of gas tax, and I park just across the way from Senator Bonamici that drives that Prius, and she pays a lot less than I do. That's, you know, that's the reality of the world that we live in today. At the end of the day, you know, there's not a perfect fair system, but I think it's important for us to move forward that folks that, you know, are going to drive these electric vehicles and plug in electrics, you know, they ought to pay, you know, their fair share and of the system. And I think this is an appropriate way to get there. So I appreciate the questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And with that, let's bring up Mr. Witte. Thank you for coming, Senator Starr. Appreciate your welcome to stay, or if you got to get off to other things, we understand that too. Mr. Witte, your arrival has been anticipated. We're eager to hear the full story of how we got here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is James Witte. I'm the manager of the Office of Innovative Partnerships and Alternative Funding at the Oregon Department of Transportation. First of all, I want to thank Senator Starr for his comments and, frankly, for his leadership on this. As chairman of the Road User Fee Task Force for most of the last decade, it's been an enjoyable time working with him directly, day to day. So I guess we're now in the informational, or at least...
We've also opened a public hearing on the bill, so you're free to speak as you would like.
Okay, so I'll go through the PowerPoint slide, which is essentially a history of the Road User Fee Task Force from the beginning all the way to today. And let's see, first I want to talk about what we learned along the way. First car, 1899 in Oregon. And we drove on this, mud. There was built out of the first state highway plan. Approved in 1914, and the most interesting point about it for you all today is how we paid for it. These are the financing for the early road system. Initially, a one-time registration fee in 05. Obviously, it wasn't one time. We came back later in different iterations. 1912, you have a property tax assessment. That's interesting. But then around 1919, we started up the user fee, the user-based charge for the system. And this is where the user-pays philosophy for the road system came into being in 1918. Of course, now we have many more revenue sources light vehicles. We have vehicle registration and title and licensing fees for, as well as the fuel tax. For heavy trucks, we have the weight distance tax, which I might want to note is probably the most robust distance-based tax in the world, right here. And if you haven't heard, it's been a paper and pencil reporting method throughout its entire life. But recently, the Motor Carrier Division run a pilot project called TRUE. Tax Road Use Electronics, and with one company that electronically collected the weight distance tax for the first time in November. And other firms are interested, and it's rolling forward on an opt-in basis, but you should note that. As you see, we're heavily relying on fuel taxes here, 58% in 2010 reliant. This has wavered over the years. It's gotten as high as 68% that I know of. It depends on what the other mix is and also what the feds give us in state and federal fuel taxes. So that's a heavy reliance on the fuel tax for our system. But when you also note that the weight distance tax is pegged to collection of the fuel tax, the rate is pegged to that, we're actually 78% reliant on fuel tax collections being at a certain level. Road User Fee Task Force was established in 2001 by the Oregon Legislature, and it was appointed by the Governor, Senate President, and Speaker, and the legislative mandate was to essentially design a new revenue collection system to replace the old one, which was essentially the fuels tax. The original members, I decided to put them up there for you. You see, Senator Bruce Starr was chair for a long time, up till recently. Joanne Berger, also in this body, was also on the early board. And let's see, who else is on here? John Charles, I think, may be in the room.
He's right behind you.
And he was a very, very important and very helpful member of that task force.
And for the committee, we expect to hear from him a bit later, so we'll get some more perspective then, too.
But I won't go through all of these. There's quite a few luminaries on this list, and they're, I think you have the presentation before you can look through them. Okay, the task force now had to sort through what kind of a revenue system are we going to design for the future. And we asked them for parameters for selection. And they said, first of all, user pay system. So they validated the old policy. They didn't want to usurp a local government source of revenue. It should provide sufficient revenue and be transparent to the motoring public. Interestingly enough, the gas tax is not transparent. So they wanted to have that. But to be a minimal non-governmental burden, which means the private sector wouldn't be burdened too much, and that it supports the entire public highway and road system, but also be acceptable to the public. It ran through 26 mechanisms. Here's 22 of them. You see things on there like a battery tax and an electricity generation tax, and indexing, parking fees. They're all here. Tire tax, transportation impact fee. I won't go through all of them. They're on your list.
The other four, you said that these are 22.
The other four are right here. This became the new program, a four-plank program. So did tire tax, and actually the task force put in its first legislation. This bill is its second piece of legislation. The first one was in 2003 for the studded tire tax, and it's still in somebody's drawer somewhere, I think. The other three were tolling new capacity, new highway capacity, and actually the legislature in 2007 passed a comprehensive toll legislation that combined earlier toll statutes into one comprehensive fashion. We have investigated that and have not found a project yet that would work inside the state of Oregon, although the Columbia River Crossing may have that as a bi-state opportunity. And then congestion pricing. Congestion pricing was showed up again in Section 3 of House Bill 2001 as a mandate for Portland pilot project. And then the mileage-based user fee, which was really the centerpiece of the program, because it is broad-based, and that's what they were after, was a broad-based replacement for the gas tax, which is also broad-based. Okay, the policy directives for development of the road user fee, there were statutory directives in the bill: reliability, ease of the motorist use, enforceability, and low costs. And then the task force added some. They didn't want to charge out-of-state travel. They wanted to protect motorist privacy. And I remember Joanne Berger, representative at the time, Joanne Berger, on November 30, 2001, saying, "This is important." She was right, as it turned out. There should be a gas tax credit provided. There should be a seamless transition. Didn't want to lose revenue from moving from one system to the other. Should allow congestion pricing and allow local option. The task force briefly considered whether the mileage should be reported manually by self-reporting or some other eyes on the odometer approach, or whether it should be electronic reporting. And it quickly looked at the technology available and says we should do this electronically. Issues that were raised were non-reporting. People just wouldn't report. You'd have to go find them. Whereas electronic reporting could be done, or potentially could be done automatically. There could be frequent inaccurate reporting with transposed numbers, or even fraud, whereas electronic reporting is accurate. You'd have data entry, again, keyboarding errors, transposition of numbers that have to be corrected, versus automatic data entry. And then because of the errors and non-reporting, you have extensive customer interface with the manual reporting, equaling a high administrative cost, whereas electronic could be low. Okay, this is the model that was tested, and I want to go through it, not because this bill says this is how we should do it. In fact, the bill goes in another direction. But you may be asked about this as you go back to your districts, and you should know what it is that was done so you can differentiate what it is you may do. So first of all, the task force wanted to use GPS. I thought that was a great opportunity to exclude out-of-state miles. So we had a design where GPS receiver was used. It is not like a Garmin where it's two-way, where the provider could follow the person around. It was only a receiver, like a television receives a signal. And I'll go into the public reaction to that a little bit later. Anyway, the device could locate itself in the state or outside the state, and then the miles were counted inside the state or outside the state. And then that data was tallied, and when the car went to a gas station, there was a wireless reader that identified it as a mileage fee paying car. And then the data, the identification and the miles traveled and the fuel purchase amount would enter the point of sale system at the pump. That was shared with the central computer, which compared the current data with the last data and then applied the mileage rate to the new miles. And then the motorist would pay, the fuel tax was deducted at the pump, and the motorist was paid had to pay the mileage fee. And then it was that simple. In 2006 and 2007, there were 285 passenger vehicles that volunteered for a pilot program in Portland. There were three zones, and in Oregon, not an Oregon zone. We also tested the possibility of rush hour over the top of it. Three task groups, a control group that paid the state gas tax, and then a vehicle miles travel group paid 1.2 cents per mile, which at that point was 24 cents gas tax divided by what the average motor vehicle was at the time of 20 miles per gallon to get 1.2. The rush hour group paid 10 cents per mile for congestion driving, and we dropped the rate to 0.43 cents per mile for them because we promised the legislative committee we would not raise revenue off of this, and we had to drop the rate to cover that difference. They did not pay the state gas tax. We presented a report to the legislature, and it has been widely read all over the place and cited in every national report and paper on the subject, as well as two national commissions created by Congress to analyze road financing in the United States, and then cited by the Bipartisan Policy Commission as well. The assessment, all the policy objectives that we sought earlier, that I mentioned earlier, were met, but the minuses, there were some. The technology was regarded as stuck in time. It was a closed system. There was only one way to do it, and there was no way to bring in new technology except for over a long evolution, and so people criticized it for that. It also did not cover vehicles that did not visit commercial fueling stations, like electric vehicles, would not cover them. And there was public concerns about privacy and how the system would work. Let's go through the public concerns a little bit. Now, I've been up close and personal with the public concerns. A lot of emails, some letters, some direct contact, and a lot of media contact. I know what the issues are without having to do a focus group. Essentially, I was a one-man focus group for the entire period. But these are the issues. Privacy is paramount, number one. There was a discomfort among a large group of members of the public with technology. It tends to be age-related. Younger people are a little more comfortable with technology, and older people are not. But even among older people, I started to figure out what the problem was, because we tried very hard to design this to not have a privacy problem. And I'm not going into that detail because it's not important at this point. But really came down to a government-mandated box. Everybody didn't like a government mandate. It doesn't matter if it was protected privacy or it didn't, because nobody would know what it did. It's a government-mandated box. That was the problem. Confidence in the system. They were nervous about efficiency, whether everybody would pay or whether they would be the only one to pay and some people would get out of it, whether the system would be large and costly bureaucracy. Those were the central issues. The rate structure also came up, as it may well today, because we tested a flat rate. Everybody paid the same. And there are some people that thought the fuel-efficient vehicles ought to get a break, and the people that drive fuel-inefficient vehicles ought to pay more. And so that issue came up as well. But these are the central issues. So the Road User Fee Task Force was reconstituted in 2010, and the purpose was to consider revenue options for an emerging fleet, the electric and plug-in hybrid electric vehicles that will pay no fuel tax or a tiny amount. Again, the governor, senator, president, and speaker appointed this group. And here they are. Some of them are here today. Representative Byer, Benz, and you saw Star today as well. Craig Campbell's also in the room. And we see at the bottom that this time the speaker decided to have two ex officio members. They were not voting, but they sure participated in the discussion and did shape what the development of the legislation. Okay, solutions. This is what the task force considered when it was developed, before it developed the legislation. First, let's make the system simple and easy to use. And design it to access existing processes that are familiar and acceptable to the public, and provide motorists choices. Okay. These are observations that were made during the meetings about what's happening in the world with technology. First of all, large numbers of motorists currently use electronic toll technology, not in Oregon, but in a lot of other places in the nation. Secondly, citizens around the globe are apprehensive about government mandates for GPS. Even in Singapore, an autocratic government, the citizens are concerned about GPS. But yet they use GPS in their mobile phones purchased right now. So there's something a little awkward there that we don't understand. Mobile phone computer technology has evolved with consumer demand. That we've all experienced that, especially in the last 10 years. And the market for smart devices in passenger vehicles is emerging. Additional observations. The existing electronic odometer system of post-1995 passenger vehicles is capable of being equipped with various wireless data transfer technologies. This was confirmed in a report to USDOT in 2009. Three different ways they identified. And then the private sector is currently managing complex consumer accounts, and consumers accept private sector management of accounts for mobile phone and computer data. So those are things that the task force observed when deciding how to move forward. So the new vision emerged. Here it is. No government mandate for GPS or other onboard unit with vehicle location technology. Create an open system for data collection that allows technology to evolve with motorist preferences. Tap into market forces to provide data collection and payment services, thereby allowing the public to choose the means by which they report their mileage and the onboard technology to suit their needs. And they should have 1, 2, 3 there. I didn't want to prioritize. What can I say? Method of invoicing and payment. So this is the new vision, and it breaks down into this concept. Simple requirement to have motorists periodically provide mileage data to a billing agency. Have the motorists choose the manner of compliance from approved methods. Data collection under an open system. Electronic mileage data reporting options. Now, there's three I'm going to put forward. The task force talked about two of them, but I just want to give you an idea of what the kind of reporting methods that could occur. One method is to have the odometer read via the current onboard diagnostic port, which cars post 95 have. All of them do. And you take your car in for servicing, they'll plug right into that port, and you can get your odometer reading off of that. A second method was, and this would have to be developed, read the odometer wirelessly at hotspots. And then a third method is somebody could choose vehicle location technology like GPS to count and allocate miles by geographic location, but it would be their choice. So then the market would provide motorist options for data collection from the certified technology. Invoicing and payment. ODOT would provide the basic invoicing and payment system. Send a billing to the motorist at their home, and the motorist simply pay by online or other by mail or other approved method. And then the private sector could provide motorist certified options for alternative invoicing and payment and management of accounts. Things like the cell phone can get involved with payment, for example. This is where we're going, is we're getting new methods for payment, new methods for billing, and we want to be able to keep up with all of that as the customers move off of old methods. Okay, I did another little motion thing here. This is a little simpler than the last one. You have a mileage counting device. It could be the odometer. And then that data is shared, through the internet to a central database. And that database now sends the motorist a billing, and the motorist pays it. A lot simpler. Okay. I'm getting to the end of this, Mr. Chair. I noted some advantages of applying a road use charge to electric vehicles. One, it enables development of a road usage charge collection system in a small risk environment. I mean, they're not paying anything now, so it's worthy to note that, and there'll be just a few of them to work with. Secondly, it enables the collection system to grow as the electric vehicle market grows. And it allows the motoring public to view an actual road charge collection system in operation. You no longer have to assume things, it'll be known. And the legislature may add vehicle groupings as comfort with the road usage charge system grows. But then again, it's the legislature that decides to add vehicle groupings, not ODOT or anyone else. I think that is the end of the presentation.
So what I would propose, since we have, there's a lot of content in what you've given us, and we also have a bill in front of us, I would suggest, if it's amenable to you and to the committee, that we spend a few minutes here, if there are general questions on what you've presented so far, and then give you a chance to go through the mechanics of the bill that's also open. I'll also note that there's one person who wants very much to be heard on the bill but has to leave at 2, so maybe if we spend a few minutes on that, give that person a chance to be heard, and then we can take on the bill specifically. Is that okay with you?
Certainly, Mr. Chair.
Great. Representative Smith?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the information. One really specific question, one more general. The really specific question, pretty specific. The data that, the data collection, private sector data collection system on page 27, is there any way that we can think of that data could be used for purposes other than, this, used for marketing purposes, et cetera? I mean, data collection and usage has become really booming market, and that might be something we want to subsidize, or it might be something we don't. I don't know if that's already been wrestled with and an answer has been arrived at, or if we need to keep thinking about an answer. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, that's something that has come up, and the way ODOT has no interest in having this data marketing. That is something that is simply not part of our mission, right? So how we'd probably handle that is have in the contract a prohibition with those companies that they simply cannot use that data for marketing. It's for a government purpose. It shouldn't be used for marketing.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Thanks for that. The other question, so to me sort of, well, one of the cruxes is why we charge road user fees in the first place, right? And it seems to me it's to pay for roads simply. It's also to capture the externalized costs of operating a motor vehicle, right? It seems to me that those externalized costs break into at least three categories. One is impact on road use, traffic wear and tear. Second is resource use. Right, gas, whatever scarce resource it's using, but primarily gasoline, fossil fuels. And third is emissions impact. My knee-jerk impression of an electric vehicle is that it has less impact, underinformed admittedly, is it has less emissions impact than a fossil fuel vehicle, although there could still be some from the source provider, whatever's giving them the electricity. Second, that there would be less resource use with that same caveat. And third, potentially lower weight, and so reduced wear and tear on the roads. To what degree have we, and it's sort of hard to come up with a number and do the analysis, and I get that with any great degree of confidence, but to what degree have we considered that, have some way to measure it and compare and to say, to Senator Starr's comment, and I didn't want to hold him up any further, but when he talked about fairness, well, it would be fair to charge 1,000 miles the same price as 20,000 miles, and I'd have the same question about is it fair to have this kind of motor vehicle that might not have as much wear and tear, might not use as much resource, the same as blank vehicle. Respond, tell me where you've already figured out or where I'm off base.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I'm very much aware and have been for a long time about the externalities argument. I don't believe the existing gas tax system is based on setting externalities. It's based on, in fact, the cost responsibility system, which the committee has heard about.
I think I may have been gone that day, but it was heard in the Revenue Committee. Is that right, Mr. Chair?
Has for quite a long time allocated costs based on expected expenditures for the road system. There's been discussion recently about adding an externality component to that, but I haven't been part of those discussions myself, and so but I know it's been fairly serious. So what that would do was would then have a cost allocation factor for dividing up the revenues. But I, as far as what additional rate would be applied for that additional, I don't know that work's been done. Perhaps it's been done by economists. I simply am not aware of it.
Final follow-up, Mr. Chair.
So it might not be an additional rate. It might be a lesser rate, right? And so even if we say, okay, well, emissions impact, we don't care. That's not a thing that we apply ourselves to. And resource use, we don't care about that either. All we really care about is road use. I would still have sort of the same question. And this I really am. It's not ideological. I'm just data-free. Is the typical or a meaningful set of electric vehicles have a meaningfully smaller impact on road use and on road wear and tear than the typical, you know, gas-powered or diesel-powered automobile? Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, for purposes of cost responsibility analysis for road wear, my understanding is that light vehicles are treated almost equally under the cost responsibility analysis. The reason is they take up, their allocation is taking up space. The added lanes are because there's a lot of small vehicles out there. The weight factor is really a matter of comparing the small vehicles to the heavy trucks, 105,000 pounds. It really beat the roads up. So the heavy trucks are the ones that are allocated, say, superstructure costs of the road system, and pavement costs. Whereas the small vehicles are allocated the lane costs and some of the service costs, but not so much the superstructure. And it's simply how they do it these days, and it's under analysis, but. The answer truly is that the electric vehicles don't get a favor when you're considering the cost responsibility analysis done today.
So a Prius.
Oh, did you have a follow-up?
Yes. Well, yeah, sorry, Mr. Chair. So a Prius. Thank you. A Prius and an Acura would be treated differently than a big truck. I get that. Would a three-wheel Arcimoto, whatever the heck they call it, Pulse, I don't know, be treated the same as a small vehicle as a Ford Bronco or maybe a Hummer under how you guys do it?
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, we're starting to get to the edge of my knowledge on this topic.
And past mine.
John Maris of ODOT is probably the state's expert on this, and if we can go into that, with John, that'd probably be the way to do it.
I think that'd be fine. We're unlikely to. We don't have all the details we needed to move this bill, even if everybody was comfortable with it today. So maybe we can have you follow up with that question offline. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know where my questions are. We've discussed them in the office, but I'm just wondering, and I didn't pose this to you in the office, but how many additional FTE would you need to implement this? And to keep this going, the servers and everything, maintaining them up, keeping them up and running and knowing that they're functioning properly, how many additional full-time employees would you be looking at for that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, there have been several fiscals done, so let me just check a second here. Are we at three or four? Are we at three or four?
Let me count. My name is Maureen Bach. I'm the fuels tax manager for the Oregon Department of Transportation. I believe that we had an additional four FTE to administer, and they would be staggered in based on when the program came online. So there would be someone to help set up accounts, for example, and work with the people coming into the program. There would be someone to account for the revenue and deal with the treasury function and report that on the annual financial report. And then for people that did not comply, there would be someone to follow up doing collections work, which is currently how we structure our fuel tax accounts.
And Representative Weiner, would it be all right if you want to continue on this sort of discussion, that we maybe postpone that till after we get into the mechanics of the bill? I mean, it's a perfectly valid conversation to have, but I wonder if we just sort of get the skim things.
Maureen was here. Just one little follow-up.
Go ahead.
If we did a flat registration fee like I talked about with Senator Starr, where when somebody re-registers their car and we just charge $170 a year for it, would there be any additional FTE probably for that? Because we're already doing it and you'd have to register the car anyway?
Representative Weidner, members of the committee, I don't believe that we've done that analysis. That would be done by the Driver and Motor Vehicle Services.
Okay. So thanks. The other general questions? I don't see any. Thank you very much. So don't go anywhere, Mr. Witte. Okay. Let me call up Steve Hill. I know he had to. You had to leave early, so I want to give you a chance to say what you needed to say, and then we'll get into the specifics of the bill.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Hill. I'm a resident of Salem and the client executive for IBM with the state of Oregon, who's been a client of mine for over 30 years. This is not a commercial message about IBM, but you've probably seen some of our advertising, the theme around a smarter planet. The whole notion that the planet is more instrumented and interconnected and intelligent, and we're all benefiting from that as we move along. We've taken that theme into different domains: smarter government services, smarter education, smarter cities, and smarter transportation. And this is a great example of a smarter transportation initiative. Clearly, as you well know, the construction and maintenance of highways relies on a fuel tax that has been essentially fixed at the federal level for many years, and it just won't keep up with the advent of these new technologies in motor vehicles. And to the point of fairness that's been raised by previous speakers, the transition to a vehicle miles traveled system seems, very, very fair and equitable. And we see this approach being taken in many other jurisdictions, and Oregon participates in that dialogue extensively. And I know you all certainly benefit and recognize the expertise that Mr. Witte brings. And, sometimes a man is not recognized as a prophet in his own land, but he is certainly well recognized elsewhere around this country and in the world. So. ODOT's pilot in 2006 and 2007 was very successful. The lessons learned from that experience are going to be applied to this next initiative, and you'll be, by the advent of more and better technologies, will better support the initiative going forward. With those few remarks, I'll just conclude my testimony, and I thank you for the opportunity to appear.
Thanks very much. Any questions for Mr. Hill? Let's see. Thank you very much. Mr. Witte, back to our regularly scheduled programming. If you'd like to take us through the bill, I can follow along.
Mr. Chair, let's talk about the committee's pleasure here. I do have written testimony. I don't necessarily have to go through it. You've heard quite a bit of it before. We have several amendments to work from. I'm prepared to do a section by section review of the dash twos.
That's what I was going to suggest. Unless the committee has another preference, helping at least to sort of orient us to how the bill works and how it's set up, that would be helpful to me at least. Okay. That amenable to the committee? Please go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chair, it's important to note in the definition section that the definition of electric motor vehicle and plug-in hybrid electric vehicle. Electric motor vehicle is a motor vehicle that uses electricity as its only source of motive power. And the reason I bring that up is that there's been a question of where the Chevy Volt lands, because it is a vehicle that uses electricity and then has that electricity regenerated And I believe that it falls under this definition because this motive power is electricity. And it doesn't run on gasoline. It runs on electricity, even though it has a battery regeneration in it. The plug-in hybrid electric vehicle is a vehicle that uses electricity and another source for motive power. And so that would be gasoline or diesel or something else. So it's a combination. Section 2 has a requirement for registered owners and lessees of electric motor vehicles and plug-in hybrid motor vehicles to pay something called a vehicle road usage charge. And I don't know if we want to say four words every time we talk about it. You might want to use the acronym VRUC, or maybe that makes you ill. Either way, it's a vehicle road usage charge.
I think VRUC will work just fine for the committee. Thank you.
And the bill sets the rate at 0.6 cents per mile for metered use of the highways in Oregon. This requirement does not to pay the charge does not apply to a vehicle dealer holding a vehicle dealer certificate as required by statute. In sections 3 and 4, we have an escalator provision. The task force was interested in raising the rate from 0.6 cents to a higher rate at some point, but we ran out of time to consider that. It was simply towards the end of the task force period. Everybody was very tired, and so this never got worked through. So ODOT proposes a blank rate. We don't know what the rate would be. I can discuss that with you if you like. But the trigger would be when the vehicle fleet for hybrid plug-ins and electrics reaches 1% of the total number of vehicles registered. And we are now at about 1.3% for the regular hybrids. So that gives you an idea of how long it would take.
Where is that? Where's the trigger defined?
Let's see.
Somewhere else. Yeah. You can answer that when you get to it. It's not right there. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing it.
It should be right there. Let's see. Let's choose. It's in section 4.
Oh, okay.
2.
Yes. Thank you. Okay. I see it.
The rate, since we're at the rate, I should discuss what the task force was considering when it said 0.6. This is really part of my testimony, but I'll do it here. 0.6 cents per mile is what a very fuel-efficient hybrid electric vehicle, not the current version, pays in gas tax. It's 50 miles per gallon divided into 30 cents, and you get 0.6, and for a regular vehicle that gets about 21 miles per gallon these days, the rate would be 1.43 cents, according to our economists. So that's for your consideration. In section 5, it requires ODOT to establish methods for identifying motor vehicles that are subject to the VREC, and establish methods for reporting the number of miles the vehicles traveled on the highway system. When establishing these methods, ODOT must take into account the accuracy of the data collected, privacy options for payers, adaptability of the technology, and safe installation of the technology and tamper-resistant technology. The bill, this section also requires...
Excuse me, Representative Nathanson, I'm sorry, I was looking down.
No, that's fine, Mr. Chair. While we're still in Section 5, I just wanted to raise an issue that we've had an opportunity to talk about, but I wanted the whole committee to hear the topic that I had raised with Mr. Witte, which is because of work on other sorts of data and information system projects and looking at how much we've spent on things that have worked and spent lots of money on things that didn't work, lots and lots of money. When I think about what technologies might be employed to do this, and of course there's a desire to collect data and have information and analyze it, but also there's a cost of, I know it's really in vogue to say let's let the private sector figure it out. They'll come up with some kind of programs and things that you could buy and then submit data to the department. But I guess what I'm thinking about is this still seems a little iffy to me, how much we're going to have to spend and the private sector is going to have to spend on developing technologies to get this reporting done. And the reporting still has to be received by someone in the department, and the data gets manipulated in some way. I'm really glad that it says the department is going to establish methods for doing this. But so far, what we're hearing is some pretty whiz-bang technology for, you know, either real quickly plugging in to get data off your own car, or maybe driving into DMV where they get it off your car, or some other way of reporting. Or the hotspot, driving past a hotspot where sort of like something in the sky. I'm not really that much of a Luddite, but where, you know, you drive under something like the transponders that we use for trucks, and it just grabs data off the truck as it rolls through. Although, I'm also wondering, maybe it's a little bit like what Representative Widener was getting at earlier, is there some simpler mechanism for self-reporting where it's pretty much on the honor system, like pretty much all of our taxes are done on the honor system. You might get audited, you might get caught if you're not reporting accurately, but there's a lot done pretty simply, you know, with a self-reporting mechanism. And I wonder if the department is going to keep an eye out for how much we have to do to force ourselves into, since we are on the leading edge of this, forcing ourselves into spending a lot of time and a lot of resources on adapting to a technology that's going to be changing and evolving. You know, sometimes when you're in the alpha or beta test, it costs a lot more than when you wait till something's already figured out and developed. So how much is it going to cost us to be beta testing or even developing this, as opposed to a self-reporting mechanism for the first 2 or 3 or 4 years when the majority of people aren't going to be driving electric vehicles in the first 2 or 3 or 4 years anyway?
Well, Representative Nathanson, one piece that Senator Starr mentioned in his preferred amendments, -7, has to do with an opt-in for non-electric vehicles, I think, with the intention of testing some of those questions. So, Mr. Weedy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nathanson, yes, some of the upfront developmental costs will be not free. I mean, it could be in the $2.5-3 million range to develop the standards and the best methods to then put forward into the private sector. So, but let's be understand the benefits of that. Although it seems almost counterintuitive, it's not that sending in a number to the DOT is actually very administratively costly, and that's something that would happen every year. The reason is, it sounds simple, you send a number in, somebody has to manage that number. It has to be correct. If it's not correct, it has to be corrected. It has to be entered into the database, keyboarded, and then if you have errors, you have to deal with the person who has the error. If you have a computer system, all of that happens automatically. It enters the database and finds its place, and then the charge is developed and the billing is sent, and there's not a lot of human involvement. One of the reasons for use of electronics is to bring the administrative costs down and make the system more accurate. And that's why we want to move in that direction. So the upfront cost may sound expensive, but it saves on administrative costs for years to come.
Let's keep going. Unless, is it on this topic?
This topic.
Representative Widener, I'm just mindful that we're on section 5 and we've got how many to... quite a few, so go ahead.
I'm just glad that's to fine. See that I have a little bit of support from Representative Nathanson on this. With me, wouldn't it make sense that if we started the program just with a monthly fee, then once revenue's there, we have revenue to pay for this from the electric cars rather than just building a system from the ground up, but see what the changes are going to be with the technology and everything else? So, because they might start putting computers in these cars where they can drive through someplace and check the mileage rather than us paying to develop the technology.
Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, really you've made a policy call. This really isn't my place to judge whether we should start with one or the other. I'm simply putting forward what the Road User Fee Task Force has developed.
Okay. So let's try to keep going through the broad overview, and then we can come back to specific questions.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Section 5 also requires that at least one of the methods for collecting and reporting the number of miles traveled not use vehicle location technology. So GPS couldn't be the only method. It has to be another method. It allows ODOT to require a vehicle subject to the VRAC to be capable of electronically reporting the odometer reading as one of those alternatives, and that they be equipped with vehicles be equipped with technology capable of doing so. It requires ODOT to establish standards under an open system for technology used in methods for identifying vehicles subject to the VRAC and methods for reporting the number of miles traveled. And it defines what an open system is. And Section 6 requires ODOT to provide by rule for collection of the VRAC. And Section 7 allows a registered owner who pays the VRAC to apply for a refund for travel on private roads.
So is the burden in that case on the driver to do that, or how would that fit under the various? It might be, I'm guessing, but it might be a different answer depending on which system is adopted or which choice an individual driver makes.
Mr. Chair, that's a provision taps into the existing refund system for gas tax, which that drive off roads are entitled to reimbursement of. So it uses that system. This is not an electronic system, however. This is a manual system.
But in a contemplated electronic system going forward, where might the burden be for the refund out of state or private road kinds of stuff?
Actually, those are two different things, and they're treated differently by the bill. The private roads, it could be a paper and pencil application, whereas for out-of-state, the methods for identifying out-of-state miles is essentially given to ODOT in a different part of the bill, okay, which I haven't gotten to yet.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Widener?
With this here, with the private roads and everything, if we were looking, could the counties look at receiving more if they're spending more time driving on county roads versus state highways?
Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, I haven't gotten to it yet, but there's an allocation provision in here. The revenue goes 50% state, 30% counties, and 20% cities. So it goes the way.
So the same breakdown as the gas tax.
Yes.
Sorry to slow up the momentum there.
And then in Section 8, it goes into more detail about the refund claims, allows the department to investigate. Section 9. And this is the allocation section I just mentioned to Representative Widener. Section 10 requires a person subject to the VRAC to equip their...
Excuse me just a moment. Another question. Representative Sheehan.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. One quick question. Is the allocation the same as the gas tax allocation right now?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sheehan, I understand there's a fairly complex answer to that I can't quite give you. I think the new allocation of revenues past a certain point is at 50-30-20. But a prior allocation is some different allocation, and that goes to the edge of my knowledge on that subject.
Okay.
Sheehan, there's some other people in the audience who know that subject quite well, so I'm only... it's okay. They may be able to help us with that question a little bit later time, if that's okay with you.
Perfectly. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. In Section 10, requires a person subject to the VRAC to equip their electric motor vehicle or plug-in hybrid with ODOT-approved technology for electronic reporting of miles traveled. This is essentially requiring electronic reporting as opposed to manual. This section also requires periodic reporting, and it has each month, it's a monthly requirement here, although ODOT can permit, by rules, payment on an other than monthly basis, which is something we would certainly look at hard with this group, because they'll pay so little, and it doesn't make sense to make them pay every month for a small amount. at least at the 0.6 rate.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Betts.
Thank you. Is this technology available now, to which Section 10 refers?
There are various ways, various technology available now to count miles, and the odometer is one of them, and we can tap into it immediately electronically with this onboard diagnostic port that all of these vehicles have. All the new vehicles will have this port. So that's the basic method. You can also use a GPS if somebody wanted to. And the thing we have to develop is the idea of having the wireless reporting from the odometer. There are patents on it, but we have to investigate those patents and see what can be done.
Follow up. Please. So the reference in Section 10 to shall equip the vehicle with technology that provides for electronic reporting, we have that? Is that what I just heard?
Mr. Chair, Co-Chair Bentz, generally, yes. There are a number of ways to do it, and this simply says that the method of reporting will be electronic. That's the way that should be read.
Representative Widener?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any idea the cost of these units? Because it says a register owner or leasee is subject to vehicle use of charge imposed under Section 2, must equip the electric motor. Is that the state that's going to pick up the cost to install that and handle it, or is it the owner of the vehicle and an idea of what the product cost?
Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, it really depends on which method we're talking about. Some are available now, some are not available. So what we hope to do is to be able to use existing technology and extend it. We don't know precise costs about these things at the moment. We know what a Garmin costs, we know what a cell phone costs, we know what the odometer currently costs. It's already in the car. We know how to get that odometer reading. But there are some parts of it that are going to be new, and we want to offer the public. And so we don't know about those yet.
Please go ahead.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Let's see. if a person presents evidence that a vehicle is driven outside of Oregon, then unless a person does that, all their miles will be assumed to be driven in Oregon. There's no way to differentiate whether they're in or out off of an odometer reading. So there has to be another method to determine whether they were driving outside of Oregon. And if there's an overpayment of the VRUC, a person who's entitled to that can get a credit against future charges. In Section 11, we enter the penalty provisions, which are extensive, and they're essentially taken off. They're similar provisions to what were done in the diesel fuel tax statutes. We can go into details for these for the Transportation Committee, but I'm sure the Revenue Committee would also be interested in these details, so I'd look for your direction there.
I think for the moment today, let's just stipulate that they're similar to the diesel structure and move on. We can come back if others are particularly interested in that, but maybe focusing on what's new and different about this proposal.
And those are sections 11 through 24. Section 25 is a change under the dash twos. We had in the original bill that the penalty for non-payment would be non-renewal of registration, and ODOT suggests that we should swap that out with suspension of driving privileges. The reason being it's an immediate response as opposed to a delayed response, and we'll get the attention of the non-payer. With the non-renewal, it could be years before they non-renew, and not only that, the vehicle could be sold several times during that period of time. It creates a large mess, and so we think that suspension of driving privileges is a better provision. In Section 26, it provides for a gas tax refund or credit if for the plug-in hybrids they will pay some gas tax, a small amount, but they'll pay some gas tax, most of them will, and so they should have a way to refund that. And the same similar provisions for diesel refund are in sections 27, 28, 29, and 30. In section 31, that's where the private sector comes in. We have something in Oregon since 2003 called the Oregon Innovative Partnerships Program that does innovative transportation projects with the private sector. And this provision intends that that program be available for this program so that the private sector can be invited in for data collection services and payment services. Section 32 is a part of section 25 because it says that a hardship permit will not be allowed for suspension of driving privileges for failure to pay the VREC. Section 33 is rules, and then section 34 is the operative date, January 1, 2014. Allows ODOT to make necessary action before the operative date to enable ODOT to exercise all duties, etc., by that date. Section 35, the VREC first applies to 2014 model year vehicles and beyond.
Very good. And for the benefit of the committee, I'll just note again that Senator Starr was describing and advocating the Dash 7 amendments, with which, according to my notes, are the same as Dash 2s, with the change to the rate and the addition of an opt-in program that would include all types of vehicles. I think it's reasonable to say as a method for testing the mechanisms that are described here. So just to make sure that's on the table as well. I think we could take a few minutes of questions from Mr. Whitty, and then we have a few people who have signed up and want to testify on the bill. Any questions for Mr. Whitty, or should we get to the panel? Let's invite some other people up. I hope you can stick around because that may generate some more questions for you.
I'll be here, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So Kirk Gebb, Michael O'Halloran, hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, and Craig Campbell, please. I'll let you three decide who would like to go first.
Mr. Chairman of Committee, I am Michael O'Halloran. I am Director of Technology for the Industrial and Advanced Technology Group of CH2M Hill. My comment is that I believe this is a very fair and reasonable way to correlate road use or road consumption with the payment. That was the original intention of the gasoline tax. And over the years, because of the disparity in automobile mileage, which has occurred mostly in the last few years, there's a significant misalignment, and it creates a situation that's unfair. In the long run, there will be a total disconnect as more and more electric and plug-in electric vehicles come forward. And in our line of work, we're seeing tremendous technology change in those kinds of vehicles. It's unbelievable how fast and how quickly they're going to move forward. Further, a system like this gives an opportunity to create a system similar to the smart grid and what's being attempted there. And that's a way to manage the highway system, the highway and the road system, with things like congestion pricing and with things like specialized tolls, for example, for a fast lane or a bridge or so forth. And another area where we're seeing a great deal of interest from the Federal Department of Transportation and even DOE is in vehicle-to-infrastructure communication and vehicle-to-vehicle communication. So you now have a platform, if it's an open architecture and fairly advanced, where you could have the vehicles talk to the infrastructure system and cause traffic lights to turn green if there's nobody around, which would save a significant amount of fuel. And I think in the long run, we want people to adopt these kinds of systems for the benefit of the whole country. A couple of comments. Electric vehicles aren't going to stay small very long. There are companies building even buses, Perpetua Corporation in South Carolina. This technology is going to be applied to larger and intermediate trucks fairly soon. There's a DOE funding opportunity now that we've applied for with Clemson and Oregon State and Portland State to test future vehicles, and a big part of their interest is hybrid vehicles and alternative fuels. There's also a benefit to the state for going forward with this. If the state can become a thought leader in this, then the development of applications which could be done based on these technologies will start here. And in the future, I think this is going to be a fairly large field, that if the technology goes forward the way that we'd like to see it, with an open architecture, then what will happen is something that's similar to what you see on a smartphone. You voluntarily upgrade to the smartphone. You pay quite a bit extra for it, not because it's a phone, but because of all the other things you can do with it. And those applications can be developed for cars, to where individuals, and it's in the bill right now, individuals will want to opt into the system just for what they can do with it. And so in that respect, I think there is quite a bit of interest on the part of industry.
Thank you, Mr. O'Halloran. You've demonstrated why this bill might be the very example this committee is always seeking to bring together transportation and economic development. Mr. Gepp?
I gave the copies of what I have in front of me for everybody to read. I can read through this, or I can leave it to you all.
I would suggest we can read it. We'd love to hear your summary of the important points, and if you could start by identifying yourself for our record, that'd be great too.
Kurt Gebb. Thanks. From Lane County.
Thank you.
The gist of my presentation here is that, and albeit it is based on the past 32 section, I don't have the latest copy. I couldn't find a more current version, but the gist is this could be so simple as to collect a flat fee at the time of registration by the Department of Motor Vehicles. We already have the systems in place. They already have the mechanisms, the ability. It's just another line item to their database. There's this propensity for this need to head towards technology, and technology is not necessarily the answer to all the world's problems. There's also I keep hearing the word fair brought up numerous times, starting with Mr. Starr earlier. Even though he first stated that the fee is actually an average, and so some are going to pay for stuff they're not going to get, and others are going to pay less than they should, but overall, it's an average, and that system has worked for us quite well all this time. The gas tax, as it currently is set up, is not exactly proportional either. So this idea of fairness, I think a flat fee is just as fair as anything that we currently have. Beyond that, I'll let you read, and happy to take questions. I know Mr. Bentz, when I saw him the other day, was wanting the opportunity to grill me, so
We'll hold him back for a minute and hear from Mr. Campbell, and then we'll give everybody the opportunity.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of AAA in support of House Bill 2328, in particular with the Dash 7 amendments. And I wanted to give a quick context of this particular issue, because it tends to cross a number of different policy paths, but when RoughTOP was put in place, part of it was to address the fact that over time the fuels tax was bringing in less and less money as fuel efficiency was becoming better and better. that was something that was non-sustainable, but we needed to find a way to move from that to something that would replace it and at the same time reflect what AAA has long been a supportive of, and that is the cost-responsible distribution of tax burden amongst the users in the system. Constitutionally, we're only required to match up automobile taxes with truck taxes. But within that, we've also been strong supporters of the idea of maintaining a system that ensures fairness by the user themselves, which, interestingly enough, is almost a perfect segue from the previous speaker's comments. The idea of the registration fee is much like going out to dinner with a friend of yours, agreeing ahead of time to split the bill. I order a salad and a glass of water. He gets a filet mignon and two bottles of the most expensive wine in the place. Granted, that's an over exaggeration, but we now have vehicles.
Well, I've experienced something close to that, so it's not too far off.
You went to dinner with Craig too?
No, Representative Widener, I didn't. Thank you for asking.
But what this bill attempts to do is it attempts to move automobiles to a per-mile tax. And to some extent, this is what's good for the goose is good for the gander, and we're having to eat the meal we prepared for ourselves. Sorry to keep pushing that analogy. 10 years ago when we fought the weight mile tax battles, we argued that the fairest tax system in the country was the weight mile tax because it captured the use and impact on the roads. Cars did not have such a system. They have one that's close, but it's becoming less and less that way as fuel efficiencies change over the fleet. So we're supportive of this primarily because what it does is it institutionalizes the fairness that we've been trying, or equity we've been trying to achieve in our tax system.
Thank you very Thanks. Much. Are questions for the panel? Representative Widener.
Actually, I have one for Mr. O'Halloran. Being with CH2M Hill, I know you're involved in a lot of different things, but, and you were talking about the electric buses, things like that. Do we have enough power on the grid to start sustaining all these electric cars that are coming?
I believe so, and it's part of the smart grid strategy on how that is addressed. So one of the major intents is to do charging at night, or charging when renewable energy is available. And there's a great deal of effort being put into development of systems that could do that. If you look at how renewable energy is available, what comes out of wind farms is somewhat random. Tends to be stronger at night, but there's periods where nothing is occurring. Solar occurs very predictably in the middle of the day. It would be very attractive to charge vehicles at that time. Another thing you might note is that charging these vehicles, the whole charging system is not much different than a hot tub. And most houses are capable of that.
I think you just tried to supplant your image of the dinner with the hot tub, maybe. Are there other questions, Representative Benz?
Thank you, Mr. Also to Mr. O'Halloran, what are the benefits for the individual in that future you were describing? It sounds like there are a lot of things the state might be able to use. Why would any individual want a future like the one you just described?
Well, it's going to depend quite a bit on how the state goes about implementing this. If you had a system, for example, that only the opt-in would connect to the infrastructure system, then I, for one, and many people would opt into the system just to be able to have lights in the evening when no one's around turn green for me. If you've ever seen the curves for miles per gallon from a vehicle, there is a tremendous influence on the number of stops and the mileage the car gets. And if you could avoid those, if you could just go through lights, having them turn green, a little bit like what happens with an emergency vehicle. But in the scenario for this, of course, the driver wouldn't get all lights green. They'd only get lights green when there's nobody else around. I drive in on Front Avenue every morning, NATO Parkway. Tremendous number of vehicles come to the light, register, that goes through a cycle of turning red for me so that they can go, they make a right turn and they're gone by the time I get there. That can be fixed.
Well, what I'm trying to get at here is this. The flat fee doesn't help move us toward the future you're describing. So I'm asking why that future is something we should all want as opposed to worry about. So what you just described to us is a device that, if we had it, might help us avoid congestion. Are there other benefits that go with the future you described in your previous remarks?
So if you did congestion pricing too, you could avoid having to build new roads. And if you can reduce congestion, my understanding is something like 20% of the drivers on the road during rush hour are discretionary. If you can reduce that, the system handles much more, and it becomes much less of a need to add system capacity, which is conceivably billions of dollars.
Really expensive.
Thank you.
Does that answer?
I think there. Excuse me.
Ms. Beck.
I think there are more, but there's two, and I appreciate those.
Thank you.
There are a lot more.
Representative Beyer.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Gibb, for coming today. I really appreciate it. I guess your comment towards the end about a gas tax not exactly being fair either, because in my mind, I think it's probably one of the fairest tax systems we have now. It's based on how much you actually drive your vehicle and what type of a vehicle you drive. And those are really choices as opposed to registering your vehicle, where you could have a 20-year-old car that's going to cost you the same amount to register as you would a brand new, you know, $50,000 car. So you know, if you could elaborate a little bit.
Well, I think I would flip that right around and say that a per mile tax is a flat tax. It doesn't matter whether you're driving a Hummer or a Prius. You're not being given that choice that you were given by buying a Hummer or a Prius like you are with the gas tax. So,
follow-up, yes. And I would tend to agree with you there in that the bill that the task force put in front of you didn't have the opt-in, which is the piece that would be, you know, the question there on the flat tax per vehicle.
I guess I would throw back to that is that one of the lines here in my write-up is that fact that people aren't going to have issue with paying a fee. We all need to pay a fee of some sort. It's the way it's called out to be collected in this bill. I mean, the complexity here is ridiculous. I mean, this does not need to be this complicated. Now, the gentleman to my left here is talking about future systems. They will get here someday, but we are not at that point yet, and we're quite a ways from it.
Just real quickly. I agree, and it isn't that you need something real complicated. What I'm looking for is something fair, and I think we're closer to those systems, obviously, than you think we are close to those systems.
The last line I say, at the very least, the flat fee is unacceptable. I'm sure that a simple sliding scale or grouping system could be devised, still with the ultimate intent of collecting a simple fee up front at the DMV. There are things to do that can still skip roughly 25 sections of this bill as it stands now.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. We've got a few more.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I forgot to mention why I'm supportive of the Dash 7 amendments, and I thought I'd better do that before I leave the dais.
Please do.
The reason for AAA support of the Dash 7s as opposed to the Dash 2s is specifically because the rate that was set, if we're going to move to a system that collects what needs to be collected in order to restore the system, you have to base that on what the average cost responsible share is, as opposed to one that doesn't return on the investment. So a person who under that tax rate would be paying roughly one half of what other people would do. I understand there's a desire to want to provide an incentive for somebody to buy an electric vehicle. The challenge there is that it does so at the expense of the highway fund. If there were a policy desire to subsidize people purchasing an electric vehicle, which is a policy decision you can certainly adopt, another source of funds that doesn't cripple the future system of taxation would be preferable.
Well, at the current rate of gas prices, that might be an incentive on its own. Thank you very much. We have four more people who would like to testify. John Charles, John MacArthur, and then note that the two people who, Pauline and Richard, I'm guessing you might like to come up together, so we might want to do that following this pair, unless we're not seeing others, Mr. MacArthur. Okay, so let's hear from these two, and then you're on deck. Mr. Charles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Charles, president of Cascade Policy Institute. And as Mr. Woody indicated, I am a proud alumnus of the Road User Fee Task Force, having served 9 years, having many spirited discussions about what is a road user fee. And for at least the last 20 years, I've been a strong supporter of road user fees. And so although I'm not on the committee now, and so I was not involved in the discussions leading to this bill, I wasn't privy to any of the amendments. I haven't seen them. So I don't have any comment, actually, about any of the dash-whatever amendments. I do support the concept of a road user fee, much to the actual consternation of many of my own supporters, some of whom are non-supporters now, because I keep telling them that motorists have to pay an appropriate road user fee. And the issue has been raised today about fairness, and to me, it's significant in contrast to this, that last session when you authorized Multnomah County and Clackamas counties to impose a $5 registration fee to help pay as a surcharge for the Sellwood Bridge, that out in Clackamas County, there's been this huge rebellion, and it's now on the ballot, and I'm pretty sure it's going to go down. And one would think, well, $5 is not going to break anybody. Why does anybody really care that much? Well, they care because it's perceived to be not fair. That for many of us, and I have a home in North Clackamas County, and hardly ever go across the Sellwood Bridge, they see this as just a tax, that the camel's nose under the tent, probably for a bigger tax, completely unrelated to use, and so they're mad. And I share that frustration. And I do believe that a user fee tied to actual use of the roads is the principle that we're after here and is fair, and I've always supported that. Now, having said that, I am agnostic about the method of collection, and I share the concerns that what's in the bill, the printed bill at least, is pretty complicated, and that the number of vehicles you're talking about here, the early adopters for hybrids and especially the total electrics, is small, and the amount of money you're not collecting that you might want to collect now is small and likely to be small for a long time. And so I would tend to agree that for the next 5 or 6 years, you could either do what Representative Widener suggested, a flat registration fee of $200 or something, or Representative Nathanson has suggested self-reporting. I think a low-tech method will probably work fine for a while, at least. Self-report your odometer reading, put it in, subtract 5% for your out-of-state travel that we don't care about at some kind of default times a penny and a half, and send in a check, knowing that you have to true up at some point. When you sell the car, you have to be clearing on the odometer. Someone's got to pay all that if you've been under-reporting. I mean, for the next three biennia, something as simple as self-reporting and sending a sliding check, depending on your BMT, with potential large penalties for non-reporting or inaccurate reporting, I think that probably could work while you let all these technologies sort themselves out. Because you have to keep in mind, really, when you're talking about the money you're leaving on the table that you need, this is minor compared to the other two big externalities: the effects of studded tires and the effects of congestion that we impose on ourselves in dense urban settings. And the cost of congestion is in the billions. The cost of studded tires is significant, and we're not addressing those now. And I believe ultimately congestion pricing will become not exactly ubiquitous, but certainly on the mega structures in limited access highways, those will become tollways with variable pricing. appropriately so. But this particular bill, I think it's a good start in the right direction. I think you leave open the option of these low-tech things. It could work. I think the people you're aiming at here, the early adopters of hybrids and total electrics, actually, I think they will get it. They will understand. They won't resent it. More than 90% are likely to comply. And you establish then the principle, the important principle, that a road user fee, regardless of fuel consumption or type of fuel, is important. And I think that's a good principle to endorse. Thank you,
Mr. Charles. Ms. MacArthur, I'm getting wary of the subsequent chair who's going to be walking in soon, so I apologize that I have to give this message to you, but if you could be brief, we've got two more people to hear from before we finish.
All right. I'll try to be as brief as possible.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair and Representatives of the Committee, my name is John MacArthur. I work for the Oregon Transportation Research and Education Consortium. It's based at Portland State University, but it is a consortium of Oregon State, University of Oregon, and Oregon Institute of Technology. And also I'm on the board of Drive Oregon, and I'll talk about that in a second. First of all, I'd like to say that what OTREC does is fund research related to transportation, and we have worked with ODOT on the vehicle mileage fee pilot program and had a research commissioned and funded that looked at that pilot program before and showed that the fees related to, and I guess the main things that it was looking at, were there disproportionate hardships to lower income people? Was there a disparity rural versus urban? And was this a barrier to entry of new technologies and new vehicle efficiency vehicles? And in the study basically was showing that that the fees had been negligible impact on versus the gas tax. So that was one point that I'd like to make. The other thing is that I guess I've been part of the Transportation Electrification Initiative for the last 2 years now, and I have a series of points that I'd just like to make that are neither endorsements of the bill by OTREC or Drive Oregon, but just my personal perceptions of the electric vehicle industry here. First of all, I think it's important that all vehicles pay their fair use for the roads. As new technologies and more efficient vehicles come into place, Oregon and the nation needs a new way of look at new revenue methods for funding the transportation system. We should be testing and exploring alternative financing schemes. EVs provide the perfect opportunity for the state to explore these new methods. And to the point of Mr. O'Halloran's earlier, we are getting to a point of the vehicle being more connected. And to the points of where this can happen is both on route choice, if anybody's had the pleasure of driving these vehicles, they become very much computer on wheels, and also on safety. And there's a program that's based out of the IntelliDrive program in the federal highways that is now turned into the connected vehicle, where the vehicle is receiving and sending information both on traffic congestion, but also on safety concerns. Public acceptance and outreach is crucial, not only for road user fees, but also for EV adoptions. I understand there's growing concerns that EVs are not going to be paying their own way on the road system. Though we can't accurately predict the future number of EVs in 2014, we do expect that range of vehicles that we'll see in the state should be around 10 to 30,000 vehicles. That still represents less than 1% of the total vehicles in the state. And we want to be conscious of creating barriers of people adopting these new technologies because of our state goals of reducing greenhouse gases, but also that we spend $6 billion a year exporting dollars for the purchase of gasoline and diesel.
Mr. MacArthur, if you have, maybe you could wrap up. We'd certainly be happy to have any of your written testimony, too.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry for taking a little longer. I guess let me just hit the four points in which I would like the committee to consider. First, road user fees need to be conscious of the overall state goals of shifting people into more fuel-efficient vehicles, especially EVs. A consideration of vehicle weight exception of less than 2,000 pounds should be considered. Many of the local Oregon EV manufacturers are building lower weight vehicles, and they don't cause as much wear on the road system, but I also want to honor those alternative vehicles. Reporting requirements should not be burdensome on the user. And then finally, a fee per mileage fee should be pegged at a comparable rate as a higher efficient vehicles. And then I also don't believe that a flat fee works on the equity side. Washington State is going ahead with a bill that pegs that gives a flat fee of $100. Where the equity issue is that if you don't drive $100 worth on the system, or you drive more, you are not giving back to the state for the use of that road.
Thank you very much. Any very quick questions for this panel? Representative Smith, very quickly.
Yeah, quick question. And maybe we can take the answer offline. Mm-hmm. But if you have an amendment idea or, you know, suggestions to address the sort of lighter vehicle thing, if it's fully addressed now, that's great. If it's not, if there's ideas, feel free to offer a quick answer. Otherwise, we can do it offline.
I'll take that back to the Drive Oregon group who is contemplating that issue.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a substantial difference between the wear and tear that happens on, say, a Prius versus a Hummer or something on the road, just passenger vehicles? Is there a big, wide difference between those two things, provided they don't have snow tires or there's not?
Short answer is no.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. and Mrs. Mather, I hope I'm reading that correctly. I apologize. We don't have a lot of time left. Representative Greenlick, who chairs the next committee, will be walking through the door at some point very soon, and at that point you'll recognize a familiar look in the people before you, and we'll have to wrap up quickly. But we're happy you're here and glad to hear from you.
Okay, Pauline and myself, Richard, live here in Salem and retired, and we are in the process of getting an electric car. We're supposed to have gotten it last December, and now they understand it's going to be in April. It's going to be a Nissan type of car, which gets 100 miles. I don't know if it got destroyed in Japan or not. It is one that's going to be built over there. But we are in support of some way of measuring the amount of miles that we are traveling. We understand in this car that we will be sending messages about our car to Japan, telling us about the leaf that in our dash, and the more we save using electricity, the more leaves come on that tree. Mm. So there's some way in which there is communication, and I would think somehow this might be able to be integrated to be able to tell about mileage. I'm sure mileage is going into that, and they're probably getting all kinds of other information all the way to Japan. So I think it might work even better if we did it locally here in Salem. As far as cost, as far as our charging our car, we a year ago put in solar system on our roof, and we've had the experience of only having to pay one electric bill this whole month. The rest has all been charged
this whole year.
Even better.
And roughly figuring it out, if this is true from what the data we've gotten, we should be able to charge our electric car completely from our solar, and that's basically all I have to say. I'm open for questions.
Thank you very much. It's very helpful to hear your experience. Ms. Mather, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Pardon?
Do you have anything you'd like to add?
Well, we've been driving hybrids since 99, and so we're very much for paying for the roads, but also our ecology.
Terrific. Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. and Ms. Mather? I don't see any. Thank you very much for coming. We appreciate hearing your testimony and your experience. For the committee, clearly a lot to contemplate here. The Dash 2s and the Dash 7s, perhaps there are more coming. I am confident in saying that we will be returning to this bill. There's a lot of work that's obviously gone into it, including from some members of this committee, and I hope that we'll be able to find a way to move this forward.
during the session. Anything else to come before the committee today? I don't see any. Do we need to carry this over or do we need to reschedule it for a future meeting?
We'll reschedule it at a later date.
Okay, very good. We'll reschedule for a later date to come back to this bill. We're adjourned. Thank you.
Close my session.